Welcome to Shelf Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson here with Lisa Murphy. We're back with part three of our little history lesson. Lisa discovered a book. It was calling to her from the shelves in a rickety old bookstore. I don't know if it was rickety. I just threw that in there for a little bit of color. But most old used bookstores are, they're not. Anyways, but probably a fun store. And Lisa discovered this book, and it's about play from 1908, or toys specifically.
Toys
from 1908. We're up to chapter
14.
And we've talked about the olden timey flashcards. She wasn't a fan. The author wasn't a fan. We've talked about war toys. I thought the most interesting was that they used to play joust, which is something I would love to, maybe some sort of pool noodle based jousting could be brought back. Any other recap you want to do, Lisa, or should we just jump right in?
No, I think we could jump right in, but to that, let me say just some real-time commentary. I was driving home from the grocery store the other day, and as I've mentioned occasionally during the last bit of the COVID and stuff, I didn't realize how many children lived in this neighborhood until this last year. And dude, they straight up, all three of them at one neighbor house, they came walking down the driveway, all three carrying a pool noodle. And I'm like, oh, damn, I just want to stop here, but I don't want them to stop. I don't want to stop. Because I don't want them to think that I'm going to stop them, but I want to stop and watch the battle that I know is about to ensue. So I slowed down, I went around them, and this chick, she was about 9, she hauled off, and I just clapped in my car, and I'm like, yes. And I was like, shit, do I have pool noodles in the garage? Can I go throw them some, you know, what's the word? Like reinforcements.
Yeah.
It made my day.
So kids have been beating on each other with things for a long time.
Yeah, right? Sticks, rocks, whatever. Mm-hmm. You learn how to duck. It's a physics lesson. So chapter 14, it was called, she had very long titles for each chapter. Covered tops, board games, hoops, counters, and teetotums. I had to Google a teetotum. And in essence, because we're an auditory-oriented platform here, it kind of looked, well, it looked like a dreidel. So it's an inverted top, very narrow, that was intentionally used for gambling. The author, and apparently you can buy them on Etsy. So I had no idea that was a thing. I knew dreidels were, but I didn't realize that they had another name. The author mentions that while top spinning and hooping are covered in the book as pastimes of childhood, do not forget that most of the interesting of nature's laws are played with when children handle toys. I like that. She talked about dice, tops, spools, rods, and hoops, board games, and tons of early forms of chess. It was very kind of historically rich, this one. The only one I really was familiar with was like hoops, and I think sometimes that was just because I've watched Little House on the Prairie, you know, and you see him like with the stick and the hoop running around, and it's actually a lot harder than it is. Chapter 15, she outlines kites, air balls, which are what we would probably now call balloons. And she also elaborated as to how everything is attributed, right? Do we know that that's really how a balloon was invented? I don't know. But the story that she tells was that inventor who was kind of down on his luck one day blew up a bladder from an animal and painted it red and started like bouncing it around. And that is what they would call an air ball, which a balloon.
Sounds good to me.
Shuttlecocks, huh?
Sounds good to me, I'll buy that.
You'll buy that? Shuttlecocks, which like badminton, and fireworks, which was included in a very elaborate wrap up of the chapter, was about the history, the origin, and some of the rituals based around fireworks. And the kite piece was especially interesting to me. I don't know if you've read The Kite Runner or if any of our listeners have read The Kite Runner. Fantastic book. I did not really know just how many cultures were influenced by kites, kite fights, kite races. So that was kind of curious to me. Parachutes, pinwheels, paper toys, and briefly talks about the role of swinging and the origin of swinging, she offers that swinging was probably quote unquote invented when a mother put the baby literally like in the basket in the tree when the bough breaks in order to keep the baby safe. And then that the gentle, you know, lolling back and forth. But I found it quite interesting when I read that passage that initially how swinging was invented to keep a child safe. Now swinging is banned in so many places because it's deemed not safe. And so, of course, at that point, my brain exploded all over the kitchen table. And apparently swinging is represented on many antique Greek vases. There's actually images of kids swinging, and a lot of the early swings that are represented pictorially are chairs. So they weren't that flat seat like mm-hmm. that maybe now we consider a swing, but they were like hooking up a real chair and pushing people back and forth.
But too dangerous now to have on a school.
Too dangerous. Yeah. For more on that, visit episodes 6, 10, 14, 95, 57. And then finally, chapter 16 was about automatic and mechanical toys, which the author states, remember 1908, she says, these are nothing new. And she goes into the detail of mechanical toys from the Middle Ages. She adds that as time passed, many mechanical toys were made for royalty. And this was actually a really interesting story. She goes into very great detail of the actual specific collections of certain, you know, heads of state and royalty, especially Queen Victoria. And so remember, this was published in 1908. And Empress Josephine, who was Napoleon's first wife. And incidentally, Napoleon was her second husband, but she was his first wife. Who supposedly, when petitioners would bring their children as attempts to get her pity, like as they were requesting alms and assistance, she didn't give them any money. The kids typically left with a mechanical toy of sorts. So petitioners would bring their children in attempts to garner her pity, and they were more than likely to be sent home not with a pension, but rather with a dressed up monkey playing a fiddle or a tree full of mechanical singing birds. And I thought that shed a little bit of insight to Empress Josephine. The author comments a little bit on the inferiority of automatic toys as playthings, yet acknowledge that toys that work on hydraulic principles are always favorites because children dearly love the mess, which inevitably accompanies a water toy, regardless of the precautions that are taken. And I'm like, that is a hell of a way to end this book.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, and she acknowledges, she's like, you know, now the steam locomotive toys, and she goes, but this is where our story stops because, you know, we're writing up about the first quarter of the 1900s, the last quarter of the 1800s is what she was writing up to. Yeah. So I was like,
yeah,
we could have written some of this stuff.
That's great. And the Agatha Christie book I mentioned a little bit ago, the kid I was talking about was actually playing with an engine at one time, which would have been a model steam engine. Absolutely.
Yeah. And she's like, that's beyond where our narrative goes. Like, this is where our story stops. And I'm like, I love it. It was so informative. Like, and I realize I'm nerdy like that. You know, I love the history. I love the connection between what we talk about now. I feel a sense of like validity, but then I do, and I don't want to get overly dramatic or make a bigger deal about it than need to, but I will say that it does get frustrating that you read something that was penned in 1908 and like some of the same stuff is still there, that we have to call it hydraulics in order for somebody to think that it is of value, you know?
Yeah. Anything you think she left out?
Actually, I would honestly say that there was more in it than I anticipated. And sometimes like just one line, like the whole idea of a kaleidoscope, it maybe got a couple lines, a couple paragraphs or whatever, but like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Huh? Had no idea that had its origins there. Or a pinwheel, you know, the origins of a pinwheel. Like, when was the last time you blew a pinwheel? But like, wow, that's, yeah, I don't know. Jumping rope. I maybe would have wondered, maybe that wasn't happening then, but I think it would have been, but
yeah.
Jumping rope was probably the only game that I'm familiar with.
Did she speak about dramatic play in terms of dramatic play, or
no?
Or did you talk about the dolls and that kind of stuff?
Dolls, doll play, and how really there was that doll play was the opportunity for the child to like act out the way that they are being treated by their grown up. Right? Yeah. I can yell at you. I can put you to bed because you're naughty, which really is more of a therapeutic outlet, right? For practicing being authoritative to somebody else and
she didn't directly mention it. I mean, the doll play and the tea sets and all that. I mean, that's dramatic. The jousting, that's all dramatic play.
It's all dramatic play.
She was focused on the tools and not specifically the types of play.
One of the things that she did talk about, and I kind of skipped over it while we were going through here, because I actually wasn't sure if it was going to translate over the podcast, but on pages 2, so we were still in the intro, she talked about how play, she didn't use these words, I'm projecting, but how the Peter Gray talks about it's real, but not real, like it's grounded in reality, but not. And the anecdote that she shared was that a child was playing like hobby horse with the rocking horse, and his nurse called him away. But when he came back, he like explained why he was absent from the play. You know, like I was called off for pressing business, and now I am back. He was, with his little hobby horse, his little rocking horse. And well, no, hobby horse would be like the stick between your legs. The rocking horse would be rocking like the rocking, and he was on a rocking horse. And so awesome. I was like, huh, that's kind of cool. But no,
I had to leave this play world to go to the real world for a while.
Exactly. But I'm going to infuse that. I'm still going to link the real reason I had to leave, but I'm going to turn it into a play narrative to explain why I had to leave, because I had pressing business, which was, it was probably lunchtime.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but no, but I don't want to sound like I know where you're going with this, but all of this is dramatic play. Like, yeah. I mean, that every, I don't even know if there's a direct quote from Vivian Paley that I can insert in here, but everything's dramatic play. Absolutely everything.
Yeah. I don't recall you. What about things like art supplies, painting and paints and
that was not in there. Yeah. That was not in there. Maybe she elaborates on kind of that craftsman stuff, maybe not in the lace book, but maybe she has another publication where she talks about that. But no, there wasn't any talk of crayons or marking or paints.
And so maybe they don't, those materials, those tools didn't fall under her definition of toys.
Of toy. But also, I don't know. I mean, clearly we had paint then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that just wasn't something that was, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it didn't, maybe that was.
Just not on her radar, maybe?
It could have been a tools other than toys. She talked about building tools like hammers and those kind of things.
And she didn't talk about blocks. That I was a little like, how come blocks didn't work its way into this? Because they were in existence.
Yeah.
Well, or at least under educational toys, like maybe why, based on the time frame, based on the time frame, Froebelian stuff could have potentially been in there, but it would depend on where she had been. You know what I'm saying? Like the context or what her experience would have been with those particular educational tools.
And she was out of the UK?
She was in the UK, London area. Yeah.
Yeah. She sounds like she covered a lot of ground though. That's
she
awesome.
Did. She did. Sometimes I couldn't see the connection really between some of what, you know, like why the jester and the court, like why the juggling was included in where the chapter she threw that in. But no, good find, worth every minute that I spent on it. It was really interesting. Thanks for letting me talk about it.
Well, thanks for talking about it. That's a little bit of a history. We haven't done a lot of history lessons in the podcast.
Right?
So that's kind of fun. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, but if you are a long lost relative of F. Neville Jackson,
Mrs.
F. Neville Jackson. Yeah. Send us a note.
Mrs. F. Neville Jackson. And F. Neville Jackson. Is that like his name? Mrs. Jeff Johnson.
Yeah. You know, that could be his name.
That's probably, I mean,
that would be a good, and maybe the F is a more now what we would might call a feminine sounding name. So Neville, who knows?
Yeah. Anybody knows more about this this human, let us know. This has been the Child Care Barn Girl podcast, back again soon with something equally fascinating. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.